Zoheitia did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across London as you listen. This is their story. In one of the most deprived constituencies in the country, mathematics graduates who want to become teachers are turned away from training programmes while classrooms go unstaffed and seminar rooms sit empty. The buildings exist, the candidates exist, the need exists. What blocks them is a Treasury spending rule that treats the government like a household looking for loose change.
I grew up watching my parents work 18-hour days in their restaurant in Tower Hamlets, always calculating how many covers to break even, how much to set aside for rent, whether we could afford new equipment. Numbers were survival in our house, but they were also beautiful. When my younger cousins struggled with algebra, I'd spread their homework across our kitchen table after closing time, showing them how equations were just puzzles waiting to be solved. The moment their faces lit up when they finally understood, that's when I knew. I spent 3 years as a data analyst at a fintech company after graduating from Queen Mary with a mathematics degree. The pay was good, the work was fine, but every month I found myself thinking about those kitchen table moments. I wanted to give other kids what my cousins got from me, the confidence that comes from understanding how numbers work, the power that comes from seeing patterns where others see chaos. I decided to become a secondary maths teacher. In September 2023, I applied for the Mathematics Teacher Training Program through the University College London Institute of Education. I had researched everything: the course structure, the placement schools, even which tube stations were closest to the campus. I was ready. The admissions officer, a woman called Dr. Sarah Chen, was encouraging about my application, but then delivered what she presented as unfortunate news. Bursaries for maths teachers in London have been reduced from £27,000 to £15,000, she told me over the phone. The Department for Education has set national recruitment targets that ignore regional needs. We simply don't have the funding to support more trainees. It sounded reasonable. Budgets are tight everywhere, I thought. I thanked her and said I'd consider my options. I tried Goldsmiths University instead. Their coordinator, Dr. Michael Roberts, was equally apologetic. Treasury spending rules mean education budgets are fixed, regardless of demand, he explained when I called. We'd love to take on more trainee teachers, especially in maths, but the money just isn't there. Again, it made sense. The Treasury controls government spending, I told myself. They have to make hard choices. Determined not to give up, I contacted the Teach First program directly. They had always marketed themselves as placing teachers where they were needed most, particularly in challenging areas. Surely they would understand the need for maths teachers in East London. The recruitment manager, Emma Phillips, was warm but firm when she called me back. I'm afraid our London cohort is capped due to budgetary constraints from central government, she said. The funding allocation was set before we knew how many quality candidates would apply. It's frustrating for us too. I accepted this explanation like I'd accepted the others. Government departments compete for limited resources. Tough decisions have to be made. That's how the system works. But 3 weeks later, I was walking past the UCL Institute of Education on my way to meet friends in Camden. I stopped outside the main building, remembering my phone call with Dr. Chen. That's when I saw them, bright yellow posters in the ground floor windows advertising unfilled places on their teacher training program. Not just one or two places, multiple courses with spaces still available. I walked inside. The reception area was quiet, too quiet for what should have been peak training season. I asked the receptionist about the mathematics teacher training program. Oh, yes, we still have places, she said cheerfully. Would you like some information? But I was told there wasn't funding for more trainees, I replied. She looked confused. The program is running. We just don't have as many students as we'd like. I took the stairs to the education floors. Seminar room after seminar room was empty. Some had chairs stacked against walls, as though they hadn't been used in weeks. Others were set up for classes that clearly weren't happening. The building had capacity for twice as many trainees as were enrolled, maybe more. Walking back down to the lobby, I counted the empty spaces. 24 chairs in one room, 18 in another, a lecture hall that could easily seat 80 but showed no signs of recent use. The facilities existed. The qualified academics existed, standing ready to teach. The schools that desperately needed maths teachers existed, some of them within walking distance of where I stood. I started to wonder if the people exist and the building exists and the need exists, what exactly is it that there is no money for? The government that issues the pound had chosen not to spend the pounds that would connect people like me to this work. That was a political decision dressed as an accounting problem. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were, all of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says, we cannot afford it. Except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still here, still watching, still wanting to teach. I understand now that my story is not unique to me or even to teaching. It is the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. The cupboard was never the problem. The problem was the decision not to open it.
What Zoetje experienced has a name, cherry picking. This is when someone selects rare examples where spending failed to justify never spending while ignoring overwhelming evidence of what happens when government does invest. Think about tobacco companies in the 1960s. They would find the one study that failed to link smoking to cancer and wave it around while ignoring hundreds of studies that proved the connection. They cherry-picked the data that supported their position and buried everything else. In Zohia's story, every official cited the same logic. Teacher training must be rationed because government budgets are limited. They cherry-picked examples of education spending that didn't deliver perfect results to justify cutting bursaries across the board. They ignored the fact that countries with well-funded teacher training programs consistently outperform those that starve their education systems. The objection always comes back: look what happened to countries that overspent on public services. But countries that issue their own currency have never defaulted to domestic spending. Greece, the standard example, used the euro and did not issue its own currency. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources, people, skills, materials, time. And in Zohia's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Hackney North and Stoke Newington rank 67 out of 543 English constituencies in the English Indices of Deprivation 2025. 1,279 charities are registered in the constituency, according to the Charity Commission Register. The area has received £47.1 million in total grants, according to 360 giving Grant nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics produced by Blocked Britain.